This is the 45th season of the Takash Quartet, a group which goes back to 1975, when four young players at the Franz Liszt Academy in Budapest founded a quartet. And by the late 1970s, it was recognized as a first-class quartet throughout Europe. And the Takash made their first appearance in the United States in 1982. Today, the group is based in the U.S. at the University of Colorado in Boulder, performs nearly 100 concerts a year, and will appear at 7:30 p.m. Friday in the Dalton Center Recital Hall at Western Michigan University for the Fontana Series. I am delighted to be speaking with first violinist Edward Dusenberry. Thank you very much for talking to me about this concert.
Thanks so much. Very happy to.
I imagine that, you know, the task of speaking to, of doing the media interviews often falls on you, Edward, because you literally wrote a book about the quartet.
Yes, it's true. I wrote a book about what it's like to kind of be inside of a quartet and how you manage the rehearsal interactions and what life on the road is like, and more specifically about our journey with the Beethoven Quartet. It was a lot of fun to write.
Beethoven for a Later Age, The Journey of a String Quartet, was released in 2016, so still very new. And how did you even find the time to, you know, reassess your experience as a violinist in a quartet and get your thoughts on a page?
Fortunately, I find that airplanes and hotel rooms and airport lounges are very good places for writing. So without that, yes, it would have been very hard to complete the book. But fortunately, I spend plenty of time in those places.
And, well, that which prompts me to ask you, where are you currently? Are you at home or are you on the road?
Fortunately, we're actually at home. It's a very bright, sunny day in Boulder, Colorado, after rather a lot of snow the last few days. We just returned from a European tour where we were playing a Mozart project in Salzburg and actually a Beethoven project for a film that will be coming out on the BBC sometime in May, I think. So it's very nice to be back in Boulder for a few days and not quite adjusted to the time difference yet.
Well, I hope you're a connoisseur of very gray skies that are so relentless you forget to even look up. That's what Michigan has to offer right now.
You know, I grew up in Cambridge, England, so I am indeed a connoisseur of many different shades of gray.
Great. Well, this concert on Friday night will be held at the Dalton Center Recital Hall at Western Michigan University, a presentation of Fontana. And you can find tickets right now at fontanamusic.org. I'm speaking with first violinist Edward Dusenberry of the Takash Quartet. I'd like to start with the pieces on the program, and then we can add in a little of this incredible history of the quartet as well. But the first name that jumps off the top is Fanny Mendelssohn.
Great. I'm so happy you started with that. We're very excited to be playing her string quartet. It'll be also part of a recording project that we'll do for Hyperion in May. And it's a wonderful piece of music. It's very much its own thing. She has an individual romantic voice. It's perhaps a little bit feels more like a fantasy. The first movement, quite short and slow, and certainly has some references to the Beethoven Cavatina from Opus 130. Really beautiful. There's a rather mysterious and yet at times mischievous scherzo. That's the second movement. Very impassioned third movement, romance, and then a very lively last movement. It's really a kind of a barnstorming finale. And I think we've loved working on the piece and also thinking about the rather tragic story behind her life. She was clearly a great talent, but as was typical at the time, and I also have to blame her family, really, she was very overlooked and not really allowed to develop in the same way that her brother Felix was. And it's a sad story, it feels nice to be playing her quartet. My favorite story about the two of them, they were very close and they provided a lot of criticism for each other in their works, and I think that was interesting. But Felix Mendelssohn was Queen Victoria's favorite living composer, and she invited him one time to Buckingham Palace, and she prepared one of his songs, her favorite song of his, to sing for him. And afterwards, he had to admit it was very nice, but it was actually written by his sister. And so I think that's a very nice story. It's rather a strange story that he ended up publishing some of her songs in his own name. Probably he would have argued that if he hadn't done that, they wouldn't have got published at all. But I don't think that the relationship he had with his sister shows him in a tremendously good light. So anyway, we're just loving playing this unique piece, which is very much her own voice.
We know that both Fanny and Felix were very grounded in classical music, and even I'm speaking stylistically, they studied Bach as well. But from how you describe this quartet, it sounds like she had embraced this romantic era. And would you call her a romantic composer?
Definitely a romantic composer, and there's some similarities with Schumann and with Clara Schumann, but also you can hear the influence of Bach, particularly in the very lively middle section of the second movement, where there's a lot of imitative writing us kind of piling in on top of each other. And we've definitely mentioned the sort of influence of the Baroque, particularly in that section.
Fanny Mendelssohn's String Quartet in E-flat major starts off a program by the Takash Quartet on Friday at 7:30, and I'm speaking with first violinist Edward Dusenberry. The program continues with Bartok's String Quartet No. 4, which was published in 1929, so it'll be 100 years old in 2029. It still sounds remarkably modern. There's just no getting around that he conceived what a string quartet can do and should do, and they still, to me, sound so modern.
Yes, it's a wonderfully radical piece. I think one of the things we love about it is the progression that it has through the piece. So the first movement is, to put it bluntly, quite difficult to listen to, quite hard to play as well. It's quite astringent, dissonant, a lot of rhythmic drive. Second movement's like this scary little nightmare of whispering, very fast whispering. It's over in a flash. We all have our mutes on and play very, very quietly. But then we reach the slow movement, which, I mean, as a first violinist, it pains me to say this, but really the most beautiful moment in the piece is a cello solo. And Ondrej, our cellist, it's a wonderful exploratory melody that keeps kind of coming back to the same note, but it's very meditative, and it really introduces a human element into the piece that has been a little bit alien so far. Get inspired by that. We all have our little solos in that movement, and that signals somewhat of a change. The fourth movement is really a very humorous pizzicato movement. We put our bows down for the whole movement, and there's a lot of humor there. And then the fifth movement, which shares some thematic material with the first movement, but it's very different in its character. It's like a dance, a party that might be on the verge of getting out of control. So it's very exhilarating. And so, I mean, he talked about the symmetry of this piece and how the first and the fifth movements are kind of like an outer layer, and then the second and the fourth also share some themes and they're like an inner layer, and then the slow movement is like the kernel or the center of the piece. That's all great, but actually what we feel is this rather wonderful progression through the piece, like a character in a good play.
The String Quartet number 4 on the program this Friday, music of Béla Bartók, played by the Takács Quartet. You mentioned András Fejér. Is that how I would say his name?
Yeah, perfect.
András is the only original member, one of the young students who formed the group in 1975. He's Hungarian. The classical music tradition in Hungary is proud, long, and still spectacular. I'm wondering if he provides this influence or this understanding of a centuries-old tradition to the group in any way.
Yeah, of course. And there's a kind of a warmth in his sound, and also, I mean, I wouldn't want him to hear this, but kind of a wisdom in his playing, which I admire so much, having played with him for 26 years. I think as the different people have come into the quartet, I was the first non-Hungarian to join in 1993. And all of us who've joined have so much taken on that tradition. And of course, we bring our own spice to the mix. But it was quite wonderful. Just now, we were back in Budapest in November playing at the Franz Liszt Academy, where the quartet was formed in their wonderful old concert hall there. And I think there was a real sense of us going home, you know, even for those of us who didn't start out there. I think at the same time, if you would ask András, he tends to downplay the importance of his own tradition. And I think he would point to the sort of similarities of musical approach that those of us in the quartet have. You know, maybe there's some common ground in the type of teachers that we've all had over the years, same sort of musical priorities, and also this sense that music does cross boundaries, it crosses national boundaries. And the quartet that started off with a, you know, very, very strong national identity now is a much more international group. And in a way, that's quite a nice message for these difficult times.
It's something I cling to. I think about music as a way for humans to be more human all the time. You know, a way for, where do we put our energy? Music is a great place to put your energy, I think.
Yeah, that's very, very true. And String Quartet is kind of like a microcosm of the challenges that we face, trying to express ourselves as individuals and feel fulfilled in that way, but also to be part of something bigger, to be part of expressing a bigger picture. And that's really what you do in a string quartet. There's a creative tension between, on the one hand, trying to be a very good group that has a unified approach to things, and yet also being for individuals. And I think it's that sort of creative tension is maybe the wrong word, but that's the thing that's perhaps the most wonderful about playing quartets, is trying to balance those different things.
Listeners, your chance to hear a quartet celebrating its 45th season is this Friday at 7:30 at Western Michigan University. More details at fontanamusic.org. And the program will feature Fanny Mendelssohn's quartet in E-flat, Bartók's Quartet number 4, and finally, Beethoven Quartet. We mentioned earlier that my guest Edward Dusenberry has published a book called Beethoven for a Later Age, The Journey of a String Quartet, which kind of brings together the inner workings of a quartet and how they prepare music of Beethoven in this day and age. on the program, the quartet, Opus 59, number 3, considered a middle quartet, Edward. And even at the time, though, already Beethoven was beginning to be seen as a challenging kind of composer.
Yes, exactly. Those Razumovsky quartets were not universally liked. In fact, there was one violinist who said, you know, it wasn't music at all. And another cellist got very annoyed and threw his music on the floor and stamped on it. But I think the one that we're performing, 59 number 3, is actually was immediately more popular. It's in C major, and it has this rather wonderful finale that's actually a little bit reminds one of the Fanny Mendelssohn might have had that in mind. It's got a lot of very fast notes and developed tremendous momentum. And he also wrote this interesting thing in a sketch of that movement, saying, you know, let my deafness no longer be a secret. He had come out of this tremendous personal crisis, being a deaf composer, feeling humiliated and isolated, and of course not wanting to tell people, because how terrible would that be for his reputation as a musician. But he sort of came through that, and he wrote these wonderful pieces in his so-called heroic period, the Fifth Symphony, for example, these Razumovsky quartets. And I think in this piece you get a sense of this joyfulness that really comes out of suffering. It starts with a very mysterious opening where you just don't know really where the music's headed. The chords are unclear, a little bit dissonant. And although the first movement proper is very lively and quite virtuosic, second movement again is very melancholy, and there's a bit at the end of the third movement that again is very mysterioso. So he doesn't really throw off that opening mood totally until the last movement, and then it's tremendously satisfying when he does finally throw it off.
I think Beethoven's music can, I mean, being this deep into it, and even as a listener, it can feel like it changes you at the molecular level for a little while.
You know? Yeah, that's a great way of putting it.
He's just a great spirit, and that's why we still revere him to this day. This is not just a nod to his 250th anniversary of his birth, I'm sure. I'm sure you play Beethoven year-round.
You know, it's funny. We've done some very specific projects, and we are playing some Beethoven programs, but we're not doing the whole cycle. We've actually been doing a lot of Bartok cycles this year. But yeah, it's always wonderful to come back to. I think there's a very cathartic sense in the Beethoven quartets, and sometimes he seems to be expressing emotions that you didn't necessarily realize you had, and then you experience one of his pieces. I'm thinking particularly of the slow movement of 59-3, which is very unusual. It's got a tune that kind of just keeps going around and round like a sad thought that won't quite go away. And I think we've all had that experience of feeling sad in a certain way that doesn't seem to go anywhere. You're just a little bit stuck with it for a while. And he does that in music in such a beautiful way, and there are some very transformative moments. And I think the power of his music is that to hear something like that, and perhaps to relate it to something in your own life, your own emotions, it can feel very consoling, like you have a companion who feels the same way that you do. And I think that's been our experience, not just with that quartet, but with living with these Beethoven quartets for so many years. And that, in my book, that's one of the elements that I was trying to get at, how these great works of art can kind of accompany you through the ups and downs of life.
I've had a wonderful conversation with you, Edward Dusenberry. Thank you so much for your time, and I wish you all the best on this concert here in Kalamazoo. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed talking.